Hi, thanks Stacey, and thanks to Judy for asking me to come to share today. And hi, our OA family. I hope you're well. My name's Sarita Kay, recovered, not cured, compulsive overeater. Just going to do a quickly hand over to God. God, take me where you want me to go. Let me meet who you want me to meet. Let me say what you want me to say, and please keep me out of your way. Keep me free of ego and the bondage of self. So I'll just qualify quickly. Actually, I've always been a compulsive overeater. I ate like Bill drank. I'm going to talk a lot about the Big Book today because that's where I really found recovery for me, in a way. That was because I have a threefold illness. So my common problem is I'm bodily different than my fellows. I know we can't mention food items, but my husband say we could buy something that was there was two in the pack. He could eat one of them and walk away. I'd be eating the packet and the wrapper and everything else related to the packet, and then I'd be in the car looking to go to a shop to buy more, you know. I'm mentally different. I have an obsession of the mind. So, you know, I have, you know, for most people who are regular eaters, they can eat something and that's it. It satiates them. But when I'm disturbed, irritable, restless, or discontent, I look for food to fix that. So my emotional sobriety was never up to par because I couldn't fill myself with enough food to get to that place. Because the problem with the food is it only lasts about 9 seconds. And by the time I went up the scale and went down the doldrums of the disease, it was like it wasn't even lasting 9 seconds anymore. And I've got a spiritual malady and of the bondage of self. And I have really hated that when I first came in because I thought I hate referring to myself as somebody who's self-obsessed. But the truth is I was, even though I would have done anything for anybody, I had a cosmic score chart. You didn't see it. I didn't really know it was there, but it was there, and it took the form of resentments and it took the form of fears, but mainly resentments. You know, my birthday's at Christmas. That was a really big step forward for me. It's the 20th of December, and it's like, you know, if people doubled up in their presents, you better bet I remember that. You know, and just silly things like that. Always checking off the chart. And there's a part in the doctor's opinion I want to read that is basically my story, and I always read this because it gives me such clarity on who and what I am. And it says men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. So Rita Q ate her alcoholic foods because she loved the effect produced by them. The sensation was so elusive that while they admit it is injurious, they cannot after a time differentiate the true from the false. So I knew it wasn't any good for me to be the size I was. But I couldn't differentiate the true from the false. I remember telling people I didn't eat that much. At 350 pounds, I told people I didn't eat that much. For people in the UK, 25 stone. Like, that doesn't happen because I have a snaccident. That doesn't happen because, you know, I accidentally overate in one dinner, like, or went on a cruise for a week. And, that's not what happened. I was just constantly feeding my irritability. And it says, and this is key, they are restless, irritable, and discontent until they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort. There's only a sense of ease and comfort from the food. It's brief. There's no ease and comfort. There wasn't for me. It didn't work. It didn't really work. It just made me more peeved off all the time, you know, which comes at once by taking a few drinks for me. That was a few alcoholic foods. After they have succumbed to the desire again, as so many do, and the phenomenon of craving. So once I ingest that food that I'm allergic to, whatever that looks like for you, once I ingest something, I start the phenomenon of craving and I go through the well-known stages of a spree, emerging remorseful with a firm resolution not to drink again. This is repeated over and over until an entire on sorry, this is repeated over and over, and unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, there's very little hope of his recovery. But what does that look like? So this is the best way. I'm just going to show you, and I'm happy to share any of these. I'll put them in the chat after, and I'll put my email if you want them emailed over. This is what it looks like when I'm in the food, and this is how it starts. So there I am at number one. I'm starting to get really annoyed, and this is like the wheel the wheel of misfortune, as I call it. Number two, then I'm thinking that a bag of or a piece of is going to help me. So I take a bite of that for that thing that I love that gives me ease and comfort. And then it's like lighting petrol. It's starting to burn. And then before I know it, I'm really in the food. And then I promise number six, I feel awful about myself. And that's why I get locked in the cycle. I feel awful, therefore I eat. I eat because I feel awful. And then at number seven, I promise I never do it again. And I always say, if I was under an FBI kind of interrogation at number seven, I would pass the lie detector test saying I will never do this again. When I was going to bed so sick, when the food is so full up to your neck, never doing that again. So I came into OA in 2002. I've always been a compulsive overeater. I came in 2003. I was up at 350 pounds. I tried everything, all the diets, paying ways. They all worked until they didn't. You know, I didn't lose my weight. I just sent my weight out for reinforcements because that seemed to what happened. I got 4 months of like being really good, and then all of a sudden, I used to see it coming over the hill. And you know, all of a sudden, you know yourself, the trousers don't fit anymore. You notice you're getting, you know, I notice I'm going batshit crazy at the simplest things as well again, you know. So I came into OA and I thought, I was really excited because I thought I'm finally not going to be the biggest person in the room. And I came in and everybody was really slim and I was raging. I thought, oh, come on. You know, I spent my whole life being the biggest girl and I was like, you know, and I was very sporty, so it didn't matter as much, but I couldn't outrun my weight. And I couldn't out train it in the end. And actually, when I came to England, I live in England now. I'm Irish, but live in England. I didn't have anything that, you know. Basically, I started drinking, and I'm not an alcoholic. I don't drink alcohol now because it's loaded in sugar. But I didn't. Basically, my drinking was a gateway to the food. So when I drank any kind of alcohol, it made me want to eat. So I put everything down when I came into OA. It took me a while to put sugar down and put everything else down. And then I started working the steps and I got 5.5 years of absolute bliss. And I mean bliss. It was beautiful. I was like Gandhi. You know that white noise you always hear? I always tell people my disease sounds like a white noise. That, you know, when the old transistor radios, you'd be trying to tune in the station, it'd be like, you kind of get this a sense of it, but you wouldn't quite hear it. And then all of a sudden I'd be like, hang on, this doesn't make sense. You know, the noise had started. There was just a bit of irritability. And when I look back, the relapse that I had, it doesn't start when you eat. That's the last that the relapse has started long before. It's when I've stopped making outreach calls. It's when I've stopped doing the step tens, because my step tens are directly connected to step two, six and seven for me. They're directly connected to my conscious contact with my higher power. And six and seven, which are my character defects, because how do I know what they are? By doing step tens. So my ego had ramped up again. And my ego has three things: make me right, make me different, and make me feel good right now. So I picked up on a flight, and the noise started again, but I was okay for a while. But what I realized I was batshit abstinent. Excuse my French, but that's what I was then, because I remember by the time I got to Hong Kong, we were on our honeymoon, going around the world, and by the time I got to Hong Kong, I was praying that they wouldn't put stuff in the room. Never mind the rose petals in the bed. That was okay. I wasn't eating them. It was everything else that they were putting in the room. And I remember praying, thinking, please don't let it be there. And I realized I was bad, what I would call batshit abstinent. And abstinence isn't recovery. All abstinence is the action of refraining from. It's not the work that I had to do to stay that way. And that was going out the window. And even though I was in Australia, New Zealand, Thailand, everywhere we went, I went to OA meetings face to face because it was way before the pandemic. It was 2008. But I just realized when I got back, I was in trouble. I was in and out of the food. And, you know, I realized the bedevilments had started again. And then a load of life things happened. And even though I had a bit of recovery, I was, you know, I realized it, my idea of my higher power wasn't strong enough to combat what was going on in my life. My dad dropped dead, then my mum dropped dead, and I got stage four cancer. And this all happened in a spate of really quick time. And by the time I got the cancer, I was just eating out of control again. I was back in the food. And I want to read something for you that was very, very, very poignant. I don't know if you've heard these, and I will put them in the chat. But it's the relapse promises. So, and I think they're very, very moving. It says if so, it's basically the promises for the what happens when you go into relapse. And every single one of these came true. It says, if we dive headlong into relapse, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new pain, and we will remember the misery that made us want to quit in the first place. We will regret our decisions, our actions, and feel as though we've lost control. We will comprehend the words addiction and insanity, and we will know self-loathing. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how there are still more opportunities to make more mistakes and experience more pain.
10
That
minutes.
feeling, of uselessness and self-pity will reappear. We will lose interest in fellows and gain interest in selfish things. Self-seeking will be our way of life. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and economic insecurity will return. We will intuitively know how to sabotage our lives and the lives of those we care about. We will suddenly realize that we are doing for ourselves what even our worst enemies would not wish upon us. The price of admission into recovery was pain and misery, and upon leaving, we are entitled to a full refund. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. We've witnessed the pattern frequently, and we see the results sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if you give in to them. That was really powerful the first time I read them. I cried actually because I was in such a bad place, and then I had a massive spiritual awakening. I'm really sorry if people have heard this before, but I was in a bath in the hospital and I had blood cancer, so the only thing that took away the bone marrow pain was a really hot bath. Morphine wouldn't work, and I was in the bath and I'd let the water out. Now at this stage I was 400 pounds. I had lost 140 or 150, I think, something like that in the program. And then, as I said, the minute I went into the food, see, when you're in the food, it is like a wildfire. For me, it is anyway. The weight goes on really quickly, and I wore my disease. That's why I'm talking about the weight, because I wore it. You know, I didn't hide it. I didn't purge. I didn't do any of that stuff. I just ate all the time. And I wasn't somebody who went and got bags and bags of food. I just didn't stop eating. You know, I went from breakfast. I always joke that you know, breakfast became, or dinner, lunch and dinner just became dinner. There was no real stoppage between the two of them. You know, and then I was eating till I went to bed, and then I was waking up and I was eating. And you know, honestly, it was like if the sky was blue. I hear people say, don't get too hungry, angry, lonely, and tired. That's not my experience. My experience is opening my eyes was enough to make me want to eat. So, when my disease was really bad, and the thing is, 50% of my head will tell me lies, and the other 50 will always believe it. So I had a massive spiritual awakening. I was in the bath and I couldn't move, and I knew I couldn't call, pull. I was in the hospital. I knew I couldn't pull the cord to ask the nurse to come. So I just prayed. I said, God, you need to get me out of this bath. And I heard really clearly from a higher power, because I hadn't lost my faith. I've always had faith, you know, but I've always had the fear when I'm in the food and the resentment. And funnily enough, I just heard God say, you need to go back to away really clearly. And I thought, yeah, but you need to get me out of the bath. And I couldn't walk. I was in a wheelchair at the time. And I remember like bringing my wheelchair in, but I actually got parked outside the meeting, and that was it. It was 5.5 years ago, and I have not looked back since, and I've been recovered ever since then. But how did I do that? I started working like my hair was on fire. I spent the first probably 3 months, maybe, when I came back. I worked the steps really quickly, but I spent the first 3 months trying to find the recovery that I had the first time around. I went looking for it everywhere, under the bed, everywhere. It wasn't there. I had to have a new way of living again. So I started going through the big book, because I began to realize that's where my story was. You know, I read The Jaywalker years ago and I thought, that doesn't make sense to me. Why would you keep stepping out of a trolley car? That's what I was doing. Why would I keep eating myself sick? So I look at step one every day. Now I do that. I actually go through the steps every day consistently in my head, because if I don't, when I wake up in the morning, if I do not say, my name is Rita Q and I'm a compulsive overeater, my built-in forgetter, my broken brain will try and think, you know, you're not one of those today. You'll be grand. You know, came to believe in a power greater than myself. Step two. Yeah, I really do. I really do, because I can't do this. I've proved time and time again I can't do this. You know, and whatever I resist persists all the time. Step three, I made a decision. Yeah, you know, I never had a problem with faith, but the problem what I had with my God, it was a God, my cradle faith was one of hell and damnation, you know, whatever that was. And it was a load of rules. I grew up in a really strict Catholic home. It's not the same now. You know, my faith now, it's a faith now. I have a relationship with my higher power. I'm no longer scared of them. I talk to them. But when I was relapsing, I used to say to God, right, you get into the spare room there, be a good God. I'm just going to go and eat, you know, and that's not going to work for anybody. And then number four, made a search in the fear moral inventory. And as it says, I think it's AA 12 and 12, nobody wants to admit defeat. Nobody wants to admit defeat. Nobody. We've tried the diets, we've done it before, we can do it. I didn't want to admit defeat, but I had to. And to do that, I had to shine a light on everything. I could not keep anything behind. So I admitted to my God, myself, and my sponsor the exact nature of my wrongs. 96, I was entirely ready to have God remove these defects. We're powerless over food, but we're not helpless. That's the same as the defects. The defect, if I give it time, the defect 6 and 7 are my new step one. And the reason I say that is because I have to do them every day. I have to ask for them to be removed, but I have to consciously not do it as well. Gossip's a really big one for me, and I'm always dying to give my opinion on things. And opinions are like buttholes. We've all got one, as my great friend says. I don't have to show you mine. That's the difference. And I don't have to indulge in that, because the more I say, just have that pause where I pray and use spiritual energy. When I do that, this amazing thing happens, and my opinion doesn't come out, and it's brilliant, you know. And I can hear God when I do that. So then I'm asking him to remove it. I made a list of all persons we had harmed, 8 and 9. I do that all the time. The other day, my husband, I've been away for a month, various places. I've been back to Ireland, I've been in Cornwall, and I've been away in Turkey. And my husband was working, I'm retired, so he was here. And you know, I came home and I found re-entry really difficult. He was getting on my nerves because I was so used to doing my own thing. And God love him, and he doesn't normally, you know. And one day I got a bit miffed, and he could tell. And I was going, and I was actually not replying because I knew something nice wasn't going to come out of my mouth. And he said, "Oh," he says, "you know, I love the 12 steps sometimes." He says, "You can't say what you want to say, can you? Because you're going to have to make amends." And I went, "Yeah, and I'm really sorry. I've been such a narc." And I just explained to him, I said, "I'm so used to being me to the tune of I. I've just got to get used to this again, this partnership, you know." And we both laughed. It saved our marriage, you know, because my husband didn't know what version of me he was getting when I came in the door. When I was in the food, he had no idea what he was going to get. I had no idea how I was going to be because I couldn't control my nature. So I make direct amends. And then step 10, I continue to take personal inventory. Life is no longer about getting what I want, it's about wanting what I have. And to do that, I've got to keep owning my resentments and fears. I have people who say to me, "I don't do resent. I only do resent step tens once every couple of months." I'm like, "You've got to be kidding." The minute I open my eyes and I've stubbed my toe at the end of the bed, or
3 minutes.
I put my hand in the front door, there's a 10. The minute I come into contact with another human, I'm sure there's a 10 going to happen eventually, you know, even in traffic. Step 11. So that's when I push everything out. I'm taking out the trash. The room stinks. I've got to declutter it of trash, take it out. Step 11, God comes in and sprays the room clean. He's like Febrezing the whole place. Then he's cleaning it, he's hoovering it, and it's glistening. So that leaves me up in the position to go back into the room then and to help somebody else in step 12. Because if I don't do service, I had loads of stuff I wanted to do this morning. And Judy had asked me last minute, and I was like, "I can do it." Because what I was going to do was no big deal. It was just me farting about for a couple, you know, doing something else. I can do that later. I always try. So it's about saying please in the morning, thank you at night, and in between trying to help another compulsive overeater. And I want to show you the big difference when I'm in recovery to when I'm not. And this is the best way. Sorry for the beeping in the background. That's the washing machine. The best way of describing this is showing the bedevilments out of the big book, so, versus the promises when I've worked the steps. So I was having trouble with personal relationships. You know, you couldn't look at me right, and I was pissed off at you, excuse my French. We couldn't control our emotional natures. Like I said, my husband didn't know what he was getting. It was a prey to misery and depression. I was always down, feeling crap about myself, eating, feeling crap about myself. Couldn't make a living. That one isn't true. That's always been okay for me. I didn't come to this program like that. It was always everything on that side was good, and my marriage was good, but I had a feeling of usefulness. I always felt like I didn't fit in. I always felt apart from. I was full of fear completely. And faith, that's the difference. Fear is always about what if, but faith says even if. And there's a really good expression that says, you know, fear knocks at the door, faith answers, and there was nothing there. I wasn't happy. I couldn't seem to be able to help people. And most of all, you know, we start to lose interest in selfish things. So that's the other page now. The right-hand side there is what happens to me when I work these steps and how what I become. You know, and I'm beginning to realize it's not me. It's
1
not, you know,
minute.
when I'm, thanks, Judy, when I'm in the food, it's a Rita job. But when I'm in recovery, it's a God job. And I have to remember that. And I just, you know, I don't come to this every day with a party in my, you know, "This is wonderful. This is amazing. Today's a good day. I've been really productive this morning. I've been swimming, cleaned the house top to bottom. Second wash is on. It's wonderful. You know, tomorrow the house could be burning down. But in this moment, it is good. And life is really good. And I have found joy. And I have a joy in living and a zest for life." And I really want to live. I don't waste my time now wishing it was this way, wishing it was that way, because it is exactly how it is meant to be today. And for that, I am very grateful. Stay in the middle of the herd, stay connected. It's the best thing that you can do. And work this program like your hair's on fire. That's what worked for me anyway. And I'll pass for that. Thank you.